Hey, it's Scarp. I've been blessed to have an incredible career in journalism, politics, and media. Along the way, I've made a lot of friends and a few frenemies. So we thought, why not turn on the mics and see what happens? Welcome to Season 2 of Scarp and Friends. I'm living my best life. It's great to be back this week. Thank you for joining. And we're lucky to have two very good friends of the show with us today. Barrett Marson, who's a media relations extraordinaire, not quite as good as me, but he's
I like
up
to say
on the list.
Guru. I like to be a guru.
Thanks for joining. Thanks for making time. And Karen Cruz, who's new to the show, a great longtime friend. I actually, the infamous, now infamous presidential debate between Trump and Biden. I watched that at your home with you, and we've shared a lot of moments together. And, you know, we've been the last couple weeks here trying to kind of make some sense of the election, what this means, where we go from here, what it all means. I was struck by a recent column by Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal. I'm an avid reader of her, former speechwriter for President Ronald Reagan. She said, "What are the Democrats? What's the party for? When I was a kid, they were the party of the working man, the little guy. That's the Trumpian GOP now. When I was a young woman, they were the anti-war party. That's the Trumpian GOP now. The party of generous spending. The Trumpian party says, hold my beer. What beliefs do the Democrats hold that distinguish them? LGBTQ, woke, gender theory, teachers' unions, higher taxes." So as we're thinking about this, and Karen, want to go to you first because you're an actual
obviously,
living Democrat.
Obviously.
And you've had a lot of experience in this state and working for, I would say, more moderate Democrats like Janet Napolitano, who you worked with. What are your thoughts looking back on this? Does the Democratic Party need to moderate itself?
Well, I think, you know, it's actually happening globally that there's lots of contracting going on, expanding and contracting politically all around the world. We're no different than that. And so, you know, we're sort of still in our infancy in terms of our political, our independence and our political system, and we're just going through, we're going through a purge, if you will. And yeah, the Democrats have really gotten away from where we were two decades ago, and it's been a slow burn, but here we are, and there was a vacuum, and Trump filled the vacuum. He was the, I think what's striking is, if you were to describe an archetype that could fill that vacuum, a billionaire narcissist who, you know, horrible business practices, has gone bankrupt, et cetera, et cetera, poor employment track record, doesn't pay his bills, doesn't pay people, all those things. You never in a million years would have thought that. But here he is. He's now the president of the United States, overwhelmingly. And the Democrats just have to figure out, you know, how to pivot from that, how to either, and it's not going back. I don't think there's any way to go back. I think it's about moving through where they have been and keep going to get back to where they were, but they have to go forward first.
You know, I have one question, Karen.
Uh-oh.
Could Janet Napolitano win a primary today?
She's a mean mother.
She is. No doubt. But I wonder if her politics fits within the Democratic Party anymore.
Well, can I tell you this, actually?
You were recruiting Janet Napolitano to run?
Well, the other night, actually, here in town at the Biltmore, the Arizona Chamber of Commerce hosted an event that honored Governor Ducey and Governor Napolitano jointly.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a fireside chat with Troy Hayden from 12 News. And his first question out the gate was that question. Could you both win your party's nomination? And she said, of course I could. Arizonans are common sense people, et cetera, et cetera. But it is an interesting question.
I didn't ask about Arizonans. I asked about Democrats.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think it matters. I think candidates matter, as you have often said, Daniel. So I do think for her, I think she could. I think she absolutely could, because she strikes a nice balance of, you know, border security, tough on crime, and veers far from the cultural and social issues other than choice, which is appropriate and tenable and palatable for most people, even Republicans. That's the expectation.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of issues, I think, where Janet Napolitano fits more into the Republican Party than Democratic Party. Certainly not choice or school choice, those kinds of things. But there were, I mean, she's the one who brought employer sanctions and E-Verify to Arizona. And so I there are some things, I think, where she is a bit more aligned, and I think that would make it a problem for her in a Democratic primary today.
Yeah, but what's interesting to me, and I disagree, obviously, with some of your characterizations of President Trump, but we can agree to disagree. He definitely, in my view, just stole. I mean, there was one headline that stood out to me in the New York Times. I forget who wrote it, but it was a progressive columnist, and it was as Kamala Harris was campaigning with Liz Cheney. And they said, how did we become the pro-war party? And there, you look at that issue, you look at Trump at McDonald's, and kind of all these things where he kind of stole these issues, as Peggy Noonan is pointing out, from the Democrats. And it is a question of what do they stand for. And I don't know that I could tell you what they stand for. And I think certainly with Kamala Harris, there was this sense of kind of the California coastal elitism. And looking at the Democratic base, that seems, just strikes me as a problem for them.
I don't know that I would. I would actually disagree with your characterization of the Democrats today in Arizona. That's certainly a faction, and it's certainly, you know, relevant and pronounced in primaries. But I don't know that like a Janet Napolitano going back could not win a primary today. I just don't think that that's really prevalent amongst the, you know, the everyday Democrat. I just don't think that is. There's a loud minority.
You know, guys, Arizona is fundamentally a conservative state still. And I know if you just listen to the national media, they'll talk about how Arizona is a purple state. Yes, indeed. You know, we had Kyrsten Sinema, Mark Kelly, and now Ruben Gallego. We have Katie Hobbs. But I think that is much more of a reflection of the Republican candidates who are running, Kerry Lake, Blake
Masters.
Well,
Democrats clear the field. That's one thing they're still good at.
They're very good at that.
And you look at it with the presidential race. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that they could, at a national level, just say, here's the candidate, and everybody gets in line. But you see the same thing at the state level, where all the people you named, none of those Democrats had primaries, or not Aaron Lieberman, who's probably
serious
listening,
primaries.
Would beg to differ with that. But they were not competitive primaries.
No doubt. Absolutely. Marco Lopez would disagree with you as well, him and his 15%.
Well, hopefully he listens. I'm not sure he does.
But no, there's no doubt that there wasn't Sinema, some woman from Yuma, I think, primaried her, right? Mark Kelly had nothing significant. Certainly Rubin didn't.
Yeah. So we have these long protracted primaries that go into August.
Yeah.
And it has hurt us in some of these races.
But I getting back to, like, I mean, it's interesting, just in the last week or so, you know, we've had both Governor Hobbs and Attorney General Mays come up and say, yeah, we're going to restart executions. Mm-hmm. And that, you want to talk about going against the Democratic base.
But isn't that just because they were a few weeks ago against them? So isn't that just them reading the tea leaves of this election and the fact that they're back up for re-election? But for 2 years, they were opposed to executions.
Daniel, there are two choices in life. Follow or, you know, just take up that baton and get out in front. And I will say, you know, yes, Hobbs may indeed be opposed, and may be opposed to the death penalty, but they're going forward because they know that this is a law and order state that does support executions. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I'm gonna anger the progressives who are opposed and think this is inhumane, but for the vast majority of Arizona's electorate, they support executions.
But I think they've now angered both sides, because I think one lesson for me of the last few years is that the voters are a lot smarter than we think, and especially in this information age, they know. So I think
I agree, you're
for this. I mean, that was one of Harris's problems. Trump plays by his own rules, you know.
Absolutely.
So set that aside. But Harris, I think, like, for instance, okay, now I'm for fracking now, without ever explaining why the change in heart. You know, you don't believe it causes earthquakes anymore. You now think it's good for the environment, like. It was clear to people that was just to win Pennsylvania.
Well,
and so you need to.
Harris
be,
changed.
I think Harris changed. Authenticity.
Yeah, Harris changed
mattered.
Her position no, on yeah. a lot of different things, and
without ever explaining,
and actually without ever telling people, it was through staff or leaks that she's changed her position.
And I think people were just like, "This is an inauthentic person who doesn't really have any beliefs."
And you know what? If she had talked about fracking and mining and couched it as national security, as decreasing dependence on China, we have here in Arizona, in fact, zinc and manganese that are being mined right now down in Patagonia. And those are two critical elements that the Biden administration created a critical elements list to accelerate getting them out of the ground, because they're both critical to electric vehicle batteries. So not only does it contribute to the sustainable energy goals that they had set and passion that they have, a commitment that they made, but it's also in our national security to do it. Had she just talked about it in that way, instead of fracking is bad or I've changed my mind on fracking, there's a way to do it. And I think she just really missed it.
I 100% agree. You know, she could have come up with, hey, you know, when I was a California senator, I looked at it one way. Then I became vice president. And, well, now I see it a different way. I have changed my mind. I haven't flip-flopped. I've changed my mind. I have learned new things because I am a human, and I read, and I learn. She could have come at it from that way. Instead, it was just something that some staffer on background floated that is now like, all right, she has changed her mind. And without any explanation, I do think that is a problem. You know, Donald Trump has shown you can take four different sides of an issue, but he's Donald
authentic Trump. About it.
Yeah.
I mean, he is who he is. And I think, love him or hate him, I think people trust that he is who he is. You know,
and he says what he means. I changed my mind.
Yeah.
And he says what he means.
And it's kind of the gaslighting that I think people don't like, where it's like, oh, well, no, I've always loved fracking.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of primaries, so our Adrian Fontes, Arizona Secretary of State, the other day, they were certifying the 2024 election, and he's there in his role. The Attorney General, Chris Mays, is there in her role. Governor Hobbs is there in her role, and he introduces himself and says, I'm Adrian Fontes, and for now, I'm the Secretary of State. And he has floated his name as a competitor against Governor Hobbs. There was the now infamous leaked audio between the three principals regarding the voter registration lists in, I think, September. It's listening to it and knowing all these folks, it struck me as, wow, these are three people who don't like each other very much, that this would even be come to light. And so my question is, does he run? Do you think he gets in this race?
Well, I'm going to throw something out there just to chew on for a minute, because it's not necessarily a binary choice. It's not governor or secretary of state. You'll remember that voters approved a lieutenant governor that now for the first time will be on the ballot in 2026. So there's that option too. So
and
the
they
governor,
get the illustrious role of running the Arizona Department of Administration. Well,
well, right. Well technically they get they get any cabinet position. Though I will say when you run DOA, it's kind of like the mafia. So that's a pretty
Just ask Andy Tobin.
There's a let me tell you. Yeah, sure, we look at DOA, oh my God. But DOA controls a lot. And they take their VIG every month. Yeah. So, no, running DOA really isn't that bad.
But would she want to pick somebody who's basically trying to, you know, poison her soup? I mean, I think it's like...
Ronald Reagan picked George Bush. Bill Clinton picked Al Gore.
But this feels like there's a level of discord that maybe... And competition.
Yeah, but you get your competition out of the way. Yeah. I'm not speaking for the governor. But
right.
If I am the governor, I'm thinking to myself, I want to take that person out of the running.
Right.
Make them lieutenant governor, because I think my understanding is they run as a ticket.
Right.
And then get that obstacle out of the way.
Is it an obstacle if he chose to run? Would that be a problem?
Yes.
Back to what you just said about Democrats are great about clearing the path in primary elections. Well,
yeah.
There's more than one way to skin that cat, am I not right?
You know, the Republican nominee is likely to have a significant financial advantage over...
Oh, no, I don't. Always. I think they will have a disadvantage.
Oh.
The Democrats, their fundraising is off the charts. They have unlimited resources. She's the incumbent governor. Everybody in the business
community
is going to
support. I know a candidate who has quite literally... unlimited resources. So I think, and I'm not saying that that person is going to be the nominee, but I just think that national Republicans see this as a Republican state and want to get rid of Katie Hobbs. And so I think the Republican will have a lot of money. So to save, I mean, Katie Hobbs could blow her whole wad in a primary.
But the last incumbent, do you know who the last incumbent governor in Arizona to lose an election was? you have to go back quite a bit. It was Sam
George
Goddard
Hunt. Oh, okay. Damn.
In 1968.
Wow.
And so I look at this and I'm like, now, precedent doesn't really mean anything anymore. We're in unprecedented times. So, but it's really hard to take down an incumbent governor. And I just don't even know what his campaign would be against her other than he wants the job more.
Right. You know, I remember, I'm old enough and everyone at this table is old enough, and probably most of your listeners are, too. Hey, lady, what do you want from me? I've known you. I've known you for 20 years, so therefore...
That's true.
So you think she should lose sleep
But no, but, you know, remember in 2006, they could barely find a Republican to run against Janet Napolitano because she was so...
Yeah, it's hard to beat an incumbent governor.
She's a strong candidate.
She was a strong candidate, especially in 2006. This year... no Republican fears Hobbs. I will tell you that. No Republican fears Hobbs.
Why?
Why? I would say generously it's because what has the Hobbs administration done other than veto some admittedly horrendous bills? But running on, hey, I vetoed a lot of bills is not the positive agenda. What has Hobbs actually done? I don't know that you could really point to a lot of things that this administration has affirmatively done, has taken the lead on. But she's vetoed a lot of bills. And that's just not, the bills didn't happen, right? So I'm not feeling the impacts of some really negative, crappy law that the legislature passed. So I think that she instills no fear whatsoever in any Republican who's looking at running.
Karen?
And I'm not sure if I would completely agree with that, but I do.
But she'll 90%. I'm looking at her. She's 90% of the way there with me.
Well, I support the governor, so I will start by saying that. But I think you're right. I think her messaging has not leapfrogged out, so it's difficult to identify what she has led on because her way of communicating that has been a very traditional way of communicating that, and people are leapfrogging over her. And quite frankly, it's going to be about charisma and personality, which she struggles with. That's not her strong
suit. And Adrian Fontes does have that in droves.
He, in spades, he absolutely has that. He is good on the stump. Mm-hmm. He can talk off the cuff. He is super confident, probably a little too confident. He could go toe-to-toe with absolutely anybody.
You know, dare I ask, though, I mean, I look at, again, this is an outsider looking in at Democratic politics, but there does seem to be an obsession with identity politics. Would they oust a female governor for a man?
A Hispanic.
Hispanic man.
Man.
He's a Hispanic man.
So is that a more... is that a more disadvantaged group than white women in the eyes of Democrats, I guess, is the question.
I don't think so. I mean, I think it depends on the dynamics of the race itself.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on, like, in a statewide way, I don't know that it really matters all that much. In certain races, like at the local level, I think you can make that matter. Anna Hernandez is an example of that, who just won her council seat in the city of Phoenix. But at the statewide level, I don't know that the identity politics matter so much.
So one, I will tell you this. I think you guys are wrong about the... about
the guests
the,
are please, never please wrong.
I think you're wrong about the money. She has raised an unbelievable amount of money for the causes that she has invested in. Now, they haven't been successful, but she's brought a lot of resources to bear on trying to win the legislature, etc. And
how did that go again?
But I'm just talking about dollars.
Dollars, sure.
She is.
Dollars are useless if your message is horrible.
Granted, but I think that people are under an illusion if they. One thing that I've always observed about Arizona that is a real dynamic, and I think this is partly the capital being in the big city, is the muckety mucks and the business community want to. They don't even necessarily care if they get anything for access. They want access. And I don't think that a lot of people are going to put their neck out to try to take her out because she's the incumbent. So maybe you're right. Maybe somebody who can self-fund changes that dynamic. But I think clearly that Republicans are going to be at a huge resource disadvantage.
I disagree with that just because... this is, I think we have seen, I mean, even look at the CorpCom level, right? The one Democrat who is there, come January, there will be no Democrats. Republicans gained 3 total seats in the legislature. This is a Republican state. And, you know, you obviously know Kimberly Yee, our state treasurer.
Yeah.
Here's someone, I bet you go to your local restaurant and ask everyone in the restaurant, who the state treasurer is, and then what does the state treasurer do? None of them. No regular people know anything about that. But, you know, here's someone who got the more votes, spent probably, I don't know what, $1 million, if that. She got more votes than Mark Kelly that year, who spent $90 million, and she got more votes. Was she a dynamic candidate? No
yes.
offense. No
she
offense.
Was, and I ran her campaign.
I understand
in that
you
as
did.
Well, so.
But
no, we did run a
Republicans
real campaign.
Just came home.
Reaching out to swing voters and to Republican women, which were the groups that that bled off of other Republicans.
Right.
Katie Hobbs actually won 9% of Republican voters who voted in 2022. That's a lot.
That's a lot for a Democrat.
Now,
absolutely.
I think the question, so that's why if I were advising her, this is free advice for the governor and her team.
I bet they are now
I'm sure
eagerly
they,
there.
I'm
there
sure that they appreciate
this, there.
Is I the question I would ask is, what have you done to keep those people on your team? And I think that when you look at the governor, when you look at Attorney General Mays, somebody who I really respect. I think she's brilliant, and I've known her a long time. We were in the media together at one point in time. But I think that this kind of more progressive approach to governing is, because I don't see it the way you. I know you're saying that they, Barrett, that they're kind of moderating themselves. You picked that one issue. I see a more progressive posture, and there, one thing that did pass at the ballot by a very large margin, I think it was over 60% at the end of the day, was something called Proposition 314, which the legislature had referred to the ballot around border security. It's called the Arizona Secure Border Act. And it did a number of things, but it will empower local law enforcement to enforce immigration law. Actually, it passed by 62.5%.
It had a wider margin, I believe, than the abortion law. It didn't have as many votes as the abortion law, but had a wider margin than the abortion law. Initiative.
Which means most Arizonans voted for both. They voted absolutely. Yes on correct. The abortion access.
Which is why you'll see the governor now. First of all, I'll go back and say it was interesting to me as an observation that being a swing state and having all kinds of love and attention from both the Republicans and the Democrats and having their dignitaries kind of swoop in, including the candidates themselves, Katie Hobbs was not on the tarmac. Meeting the airplane.
Ever.
She was very selective about when she would appear at things as it relates to the Harris campaign. Very selectively, and she was not front and center in any way.
Mm-hmm. Karen, let me ask you this question. If Nikki Haley was the presidential nominee, would you have called Arizona a swing state?
Sure, why would I not?
I think Nikki Haley would have won by 10 points.
Yeah, I think the world of her.
Yeah, a 10 point win is not a swing state.
Well, but again, the candidates matter.
Right. I don't think that's what I'm saying.
We're not a culturally conservative state. We are a
libertarian state. We're a
libertarian
state.
Absolutely. We are a center right, but a business focused.
Agreed.
Like, you know,
we are a Doug Ducey state.
We are absolutely a Barry Goldwater, Janet Napolitano, yes.
By the way, for those of you who don't know, your host of the show was both the communications director and the chief of staff for Doug Ducey, and yet I don't know if I scored any points by saying we're a Doug Ducey state.
No, I agree.
There we go. Boy.
No, we are a Doug Ducey state, and and you saw that with the candidates that
Doug
came
Ducey
after.
Won in 2018. Not a generation ago, 2018, by almost 15 points.
Oh, I know. Fred Duval
Well, that's that was the first, right? No, that was the first. I'm talking about against David Garcia,
a
young Hispanic, more liberal for sure.
Yeah.
But he won by 15 points. Mm-hmm. That doesn't scream swing state to me.
Well, I don't know that a Carrie Lake would even if she won, she would never win by that much.
Oh God,
Doug
no,
Ducey
no,
because
not
he
at
was
all.
A business,
yes.
Traditional business, conservative Republican.
That's exactly my point. And that's why I say Nikki Haley, someone like Nikki Haley,
well,
maybe even Ron DeSantis Democrats would have wasted every single dollar they put in if someone like Nikki Haley.
I'm not convinced of that.
No?
I mean,
not either.
Look, Trump won the state by what was it, 6 points? 7 points, that's a pretty big margin.
Was it? I thought it was like four. But
somebody our producer Blake will fact check that. Yeah. But somewhere in that range. And so I will tell you this, because I think that is our elite political viewpoint. Trump won a lot of people who would not have voted for Nikki Haley.
I disagree with that.
I disagree.
I think Trump won.
Working class.
Actually.
The biggest, okay, Nate Silver, who's a very smart
More gurus.
Guy.
Yeah. Yeah, more gurus.
He said that the areas in which the Democrats had the biggest bleed were working class minorities and people who live in big blue cities.
Yep. Because they were scared about the border. And angry about inflation. That's it.
I agree, absolutely.
I don't think that every Republican can speak to them that way. I don't think that, I thought Mitt Romney was great in 2012. I don't think that brand would have delivered this result in this day and age. I don't. And I'm not sure Nikki Haley would have either. Yeah. I think that Trump had... that voter people came out and voted for him who would not have voted if there was another Republican nominee.
I believe that a Republican was probably going to win the state, again, no matter who it was, because of where we were economically and on the border.
Yeah,
you know, I remember, it was like, what, 18 months ago now, there were all these stories about how egg prices are, like, through the roof. And, you know, it was $1.50 for a dozen, and then all of a sudden it's like $4 a dozen, right? It's still like $3.50 for a dozen eggs. And I think, you know, and gas.
To the store. When's the last time you went to the grocery store?
It's been a while. But like, you know what I do? I go out to dinner because Barrett doesn't cook, and Barrett's married to someone who also doesn't cook. And so, I go out to restaurants, and I go out to a restaurant, and every single entree is $5-$10 more expensive. To go out to a restaurant now is just substantially more expensive than it was 4 years ago. And I think, so no matter the Republican, and quite frankly, no matter the Democrat, I think a Republican was going to win this state. Gas prices, now, they're not bad now. But a year ago, they were $5 a gallon.
I will go back to what Peggy Noonan said, which I agree with. If it was Nikki Haley versus Kamala Harris, I don't think that Haley would have connected with the working class. I don't think she would have been running as an anti-war candidate.
Right.
And she would have been talking about deficit reduction, Social Security entitlement reform, all this stuff. It would have been the 2012 Republican Party, which, by the way, got slaughtered. So, like it or not, Trump has reinvented the Republican Party into a more winning coalition. And I do think candidates matter. So I really have a hard time believing.
I disagree. I think the Democrats gave him a completely gaping, wide open doorway to step through and steal from us what had been ours. We lost it. We walked away from it.
Yeah.
So it's not like he earned it. He spoke anger where they were angry, and the Democrats just could not get out of our own way.
Could the Dems have won this year? Is there somebody else out there who could have beat Trump?
Like, I wonder.
Biden have stayed in?
No. I wonder if Josh Shapiro would have.
He would have been interesting.
I wonder if he would have had the same headwinds, because it would have been a complete break from this administration, whereas Harris wouldn't break at all from Biden, which, as a political insider, I understand that. Yeah. But again, you know, we don't have political insiders, you know, as a majority of voters. So I understand why she didn't, but I wonder if someone unshackled to this administration would have had a much better time prosecuting the case for Democratic priorities. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a game we can play for years, and there's no right answer. You know, I just think that the economy did, you know, trump everything, and Democrats, you know, one of the things that I think everyone had enough of was Biden and Harris, for that matter, telling us the economy was really good.
Yeah.
And looking at the numbers, I guess, sure. But if I don't feel it, if an economist tells me that the economy is great, well, that's wonderful. But if I'm working two jobs and, you know, my rent, you know, especially here in Phoenix, right, rent and mortgage and the interest rates, it's so hard to buy a home or, you know, rent an apartment.
We were told that that's disinformation.
Right,
if
sure.
If you said the economy's bad, if you said the right, crime is up, that's disinformation. And I think the Democrats managed, they were so focused on managing information that they kind of had blinders on. But, and I hate to, I mean, I feel like I'm sounding like I'm Trump's spokesperson here, but
the
job is
director of communications already been filled.
But I think that when you look at the voting disparity, particularly on college educated, non-college educated, the issues that he has been willing to lean into, like some of the woke stuff, I just don't think a lot of other Republicans would have done that. And so I think that it's just like Obama built a coalition,
mm-hmm.
and Hillary Clinton didn't get that.
Right. And
you know, now maybe if she was the nominee, I just saw Bill Clinton say if she was the nominee in 2008, she would have won in a landslide. I think that's true. But in 2016, I think they thought his coalition would just transfer mm-hmm. her. In many ways, Donald Trump was the person standing in the way of Kamala Harris getting the Obama coalition, because I think a lot of the people who voted for Trump, when you look at all the analysis of these counties, a lot of people who voted for Obama voted for Trump.
Right.
Yeah, but again, I think that's more a symptom of the time that we live in. It's not because those people supported Trump. Again, they were afraid of the border, because that's concerning. No longer is it just Mexicans who live on or near the border that are coming across to work and build a better life for their family, and they're going back. Even Congressman Shattuck was shouting from the rooftops about having an open border specifically for that to occur, and that we should be capitalizing on that.
Wait, Congressman Shattuck?
Yes.
He's been out of office for some time.
But back in the day.
Oh,
that's
okay,
my point.
Okay.
That's my point, is back in the day. So yeah. It's very different now. Now it's scary. Now there's not thousands coming over. There's hundreds of thousands coming over. And they're coming over from all over the world, not just from Mexico to work. So it's a very different dynamic going on the border now. That freaks people out, including Democrats. And then you've got inflation and the economy, which I get it, that unemployment is low, which is good. And that there was a tick up in wage earnings, and that helped, but it wasn't keeping pace with inflation, obviously. But people weren't. You're right. People would go to the store. I go to the store or to a restaurant or to the gas station or to buy clothes or whatever. But we've got supply chain issues. We've got climate change that's really wreaking havoc on huge crops. That's driving up food prices. We've got. Just a million things going on that are contributing to both of those factors. And you can't explain that to a voter in 15 seconds.
No.
There's just no way.
Well, and I think obviously the economy, the border, huge issues. But I think there was something deeper. I think I think that Trump was able to tap into a part of the electorate that really felt that nobody was talking to them, listening to them, and
I agree.
The turnout was massive. I mean, there were people
the Democrats, they fumbled, but just fumbled it completely. And again, we opened up the door wide enough for Trump to just walk through. We kind of welcomed him in and said, hey, take what we got. We have a roadmap, but we're just abandoning, decades of building constituencies and representing this particular group of people.
Do you think that the focus on all the legal stuff was that backfired? The prosecutions and so forth, that it almost elevated Trump through the primary process and so forth?
I don't think so. I think it was just because it was in context, it didn't matter. And people started to get angry about, why are you keep talking at me about these things? We know he's a horrible person.
Yeah.
We know that. But we care more about these other things, and you're not listening to me. You're not listening to me. You're not listening to me. And they got angry. They're scared and they're angry. And that's how Trump got elected. That's how he was speaking to people.
Right. And what I think is, you go back to 1980. You go back to 1992. And then you go back, to this year. And I think voters revolted against, the one-term presidents because the economy and their lives, they were in an economic malaise. And it's just hard to run on that. And it's easy to run against that. And so I really do think that was a lot of the problem. Daniel, I know you know these, you've seen this data on the amount of Hispanics who were voting in Arizona and nationally for Donald Trump. And, you're kind of going, you're sort of voting against your own interests.
Why?
Well, I think on immigration.
No, because they're legal immigrants.
Well, yes, and they have family who are not. I mean, Donald Trump has talked about even going after the DACA students. I mean,
he just did an interview and said he's not, and he wants to find a path for the Dreamers.
Right, but that's this week.
I think the legal immigrants are more patriotic and more protective of our country than Americans who were born here.
Sometimes,
in many cases.
I would say it was for many of those people for. You ask about his legal problems. I would say for the majority of Americans who don't watch CNN or MSNBC all day like I do, they didn't even know that much. I mean, they may have seen he was convicted of something, and quite frankly, it was the only thing he's been convicted of so far is basically hiding a payment to a porn star that he didn't want his wife to know about. Much like the whole Bill and Monica situation, I didn't care. Of course he's going to lie about being with an intern. Of course he is. Duh. You know, that's just the way it is. Of course he's going to lie about being with a porn star. Duh. And so I think people just set that aside. They didn't care because they're focused on, I got to get home. I got to get my kid to soccer practice. I got to figure out if we're going to take a vacation this year. I don't think we can swing it. I got to figure out, you know, rent and, you know, this. And the kid has, you know, club volleyball now. I can't just go to school volleyball. I got to go to club volleyball. How am I going to pay for that? That is what they were much more focused on than Donald Trump's many legal issues.
And taking care of aging parents. You know, we're the sandwich generation, all of us of roughly the same age. Thank you very much. we are the sandwich generation. So there's a lot. It's just we're changing. The dynamics are shifting so rapidly. Social media and technology is creating some of that, is pushing some of that. And a lot of it's good, and a lot of it is scary, and a lot of it is just unknown. But there's so much coming at us all the time, all the information, all the responsibility. It still exists.
So the
political lens, you know, overlaid over that, people just don't, they're not paying attention. Yeah. They have other things.
And now, Karen, because of you, I just want a corned beef sandwich. I really want a corned beef sandwich now. Corned beef sandwich now.
So looking ahead, you mentioned the Republicans picked up seats in the legislature, which was very much in play.
Fat majorities.
I mean, yeah. in comparison to where we've been the last few cycles, I would say somewhat. So what does this all mean? We have a new Speaker of the House, Steve Montenegro, first Hispanic Speaker of the House in Arizona history, and Warren Peterson back as Senate President, Governor Hobbs in the governor's office. So, Karen, what do you think we can expect? And what does all this mean for 2026?
Because there wasn't the seismic shift or even a change in either of the chambers that the Democrats were hopeful for, I think it's going to be a lot of the same. I think there's going to be, in some areas, I think there's going to be a lot of hyper-partisanship. And in other areas, I think they're going to work together to get some stuff done. I think on water policy, they've got to figure that out. Some sort of a response to Pinal County and to the Wilcox Basin in terms of groundwater management and, you know, converting agricultural lands to urban lands so that they can be developed and use less water while we're addressing affordable housing, which, oh, by the way, also needs to happen. I think Prop 123 is another area that there's a lot of discussion and work being done now to figure out what that could look like, but hopefully that's another area where some bipartisanship can occur to get that done.
Yeah.
I think that the Republicans are going to again try to put her in a box with some of this woke stuff. Kavanaugh's dropped some of the bathroom bills and things like that. It's like if that makes it up to her desk, that will be, you know, Barrett, to your point, it'll be a true test of whether she's able to navigate some of that's going to come her way, whether she wants it or not. They're going to try to put her in a box. Will she veto it or will she not?
One of the things I really like about Karen is she's an optimist. I mean, she's an irrational. She's an irrational optimist. Like, I don't think they're going to work together on a damn thing. Reluctantly. But I just don't see a lot of working together. I think Republicans will feel a little emboldened because they now have historic majorities of two in each chamber now. And that was said facetiously. I know it's not historic. I think that there won't be a lot of coming together and working. I think we're going to see a lot of vetoes. But I also think, you know, if we saw a record number of, I don't know, record, but if we saw a significant number of referrals from the legislature to the ballot, I think we're going to see more next year or 2 years from now.
But you know what I'll tell you this, is in these legislative races, the biggest and most potent hits against the Democratic incumbents were bills that they voted against that Hobbs vetoed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, increased border penalties on fentanyl dealers. Yeah. Notifying parents if their kid wants to change their pronoun and the schools are keeping that information from the parents. It was kind of a potpourri of woke, of border. And so I think that there was this feeling among the elites that, these vetoes are great. You know, this is great for her. It's increasing her profile. I'm not sure that's how it's going to play out among voters. I think that a lot of those are things that are politically popular.
A lot of them are. And, certainly on the border stuff and that fentanyl bill. Republicans sent a lot of vetoed bills to the ballot. A couple of them were approved. The majority were not. I had a reporter call me about a week after the election and say, if they do this again, where the Republican legislators send stuff to the ballot, will voters rebel against these Republican legislators? And I was like, well, we just had that, and Republicans gained in the legislature. So, no, they don't support everything. You know, some of the things that, taking away their own voters' rights, if you will, by mandating new requirements for signatures on initiatives and things like that. Voters weren't inclined to take away their own power. But they approved the border initiative or referral. They approved
Prop 312 to crack down on homelessness.
Homelessness and the increased benefits.
Stupid.
Increased benefits for law enforcement, survivors of someone who died in line of a public service authority who died in the line of service and things like that. So, yeah, there were several things that, were popular and got approved. And
let me ask this, though. I mean, this did feel like the perfect storm. Abortion, the Democrats having the governor's office, they raised a massive amount of money and outraised and outspent Republicans dramatically. Can they even win the legislature? Does this close the book on that? Should Democrats keep charging up the hill and trying to do it?
Absolutely.
I absolutely think they can.
Yes, we can.
That you still think it's winnable.
I think it is winnable.
Absolutely.
It's just this cycle.
I think these are competitive districts. But,
yeah.
But
this cycle just won. Look, as you well know. There were two Democrats in the district where you live, and by next year there will be zero.
Yeah.
I don't believe that district is foreclosed on Democrats. And in fact, the supervisorial race.
And we've talked about this on this show. Who do they have in to campaign for them? Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's what people want to see.
Agreed.
Which is why I go back to saying candidates matter. And in the context of the time that it really matters. Anything is possible, but within those two dynamics, it's the two candidates in that said district were probably a little too progressive. Maybe in some other year that would have resonated and it would have been okay. I also think that part of the dynamic that was happening at the candidate level for Democratic voters and for pro-choice Republican voters is that when they put the abortion issue on, the hope and the wish at the time was to drive Democratic vote out to help the ticket. Which I think it probably did, but once that happened and they checked that box, then they could move over to the candidates and then vote on other issues because now choice is now protected. So they're comfortable with that.
I think it's the biggest thing that helped Republicans this cycle because it kind of outsourced the issue to something separate.
But not only that, but what I questioned before the election and really it's either voters were discerning or schizophrenic, whichever one you want to take a look at or however you want to look at it. Voters didn't hold a Republican candidate's support or opposition for abortion when they went to fill out the ballot. I'm going to support, I'm a Republican and I support abortion rights, but I am not going to hold it against my Republican legislator, legislative candidate, who may be pro-life, but I'm not holding this one issue against them, and I'll still vote for them.
Which
and I think
why.
Democrats really had hoped that, oh, you are pro-life, and people are definitely going to support Prop 3, whatever, I can't even remember the name, the abortion initiative.
339?
379, I think.
339, I think it was, yeah. 339. They could discern, I will vote but to support that, but the world is a lot different than just this one issue. And for the holistic thing, I'm going to still support this Republican candidate.
They were angry. They were really angry. They're scared and they're angry. So they protect choice over here, and then they look at the rest of the ballot and voted their anger, their despair, their personal beliefs, their fears, their whatever, over here on the candidate side. So, yeah.
Well, I could talk to you guys all day, which I do some days. We just don't have microphones on. Thanks for joining. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank
happy
you.
Happy Festivus.
Thank you. I feel that, I'm now being crowded out. You know, I don't know that, that Hanukkah Harry is going to, come to Arizona this year. So I'm very sad. But anyways, yes, Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, happy holidays, everybody. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And I think the big takeaway from this conversation is this is a Doug Ducey state. I'm living my best life.